Second down and 10 from the 51 of UBC. Here's Pickton looking right, throwing underneath. That pass is caught by Stusik. Nice grab to the 33-yard line. So he drops one, and this has been a redemption drive. First Forsa, now Stusik. Nice two-handed catch. Kind of over across his body.
Yeah, distracted the replay. Great, outstanding, full extension, all hands catch by Stusik there.
That's moving how you coach him again. Up, right?
That's keep it away from the body. Yeah.
Almost looks like he caught the back half of the football. It is a first down and 10 at the 33 of the T-Birds. Right hash, little stretch handoff here, and Borsa with a juke and a jive, and Borsa up to the races. 10, 5, what a run! Kyle Borsa! And the Rams have the lead. That was a nifty move in the hole.
And the redemption continues. Outstanding run. Couple jukes and then that speed again by Borsa. Just hitting that hole hard all the way to the end zone. Great job by that O-line.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
And thanks for supporting this podcast. Now more than ever, it's important to keep this sport alive as we continue to battle through this pandemic. And thanks to my great sponsors, Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan. I had a great pizza from Pizza Hut this weekend on Quan Street in East Regina. I highly recommend it. Phase First Medical Aesthetics. Turn back the clock naturally. Ask about birthday Botox. And for the guys, Brotox. Located above Gabbo's on Dudney Avenue. Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina, getting the real estate game with the three-time Grey Cup champion, 306-502-5355. Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. For grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance, give Corey Zadorozniak a call out there at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. And Mark Greshner Photography, check out his awesome work at markgreshner.com. Also on Podbean, the shot of Mosaic Stadium comes from Mark Greshner. And let's start off the podcast with our homegrown segment for Riviere Ag Seed, Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown certified durum, yellow peas, and chickpeas. Thanks to Paul Riviere and his great family out there in the Radville area. Today in the spotlight, it's U of R Rams quarterback Sawyer Bittner from Moose Jaw. Well, Sawyer, how did it feel to suit up in Ram colors this past fall workout session?
Yeah, it was awesome. I think the first couple days were just kind of getting used to how the team does things and kind of getting used to, you know, like a new uniform and all that was kind of a little bit wild. But, you know, after the first few days, just kind of settling in and playing football like I know how to do. So, but no, I had a blast. It was good to get out there and kind of get a better look at the offense and, you know, get some chemistry with some of the guys out in the field. So it was fun.
How different are things here in Regina as opposed to your last stop in Ottawa?
You know, everywhere you go, like, coaches are going to run teams differently, and, you know, there's definitely some aspects that are the same, but there's a lot of stuff that was different. Obviously, you're trying to learn a whole new system, and you got a whole new group of guys that you're trying to fit in with, so that was different. And in Ottawa, I was the only guy from Saskatchewan on the team, so, you know, come back to Regina, a lot more local guys, you know, and a lot of guys I kind of played high school with, or Team Sask with, and a lot of coaches I kind of grown up with too, so that was neat. It was kind of good to get back out with some guys that I know real well, so it was fun.
What do you like about this offense under Mark McConkey?
Well, it's just very quarterback friendly. I think, you know, you've seen that from the numbers they put up, and the Rams have historically always been a team that likes to throw the ball. So if you're a quarterback, like, you know, it's really just a great system to be in. I still got a long ways to go, but I thought just over a month of practices that we had, I thought I picked it up pretty well. So, like I said, I still got some work to do, but it was just, you know, it's got good complexity to it, but at the same time, it's had some simplicity. So it's a good mix of both, and I just really, really enjoyed diving into it.
How are you different than Josh Donnelly in your play for people that, you know, haven't seen you play or can't remember seeing you play from a couple of years ago?
You know, I don't really compare myself to anybody else. I mean, every quarterback's a little bit different. Me and Josh have kind of different things that we bring to the table. You know, I just pride myself on being a good leader and, you know, being accurate is my main thing. I don't have a huge arm, but I've always thought I've been a pretty accurate quarterback, which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
that's one thing, yeah, that's, eh? That's one thing. You can't teach accuracy. You can't teach somebody to be accurate. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah, it's definitely a tricky thing. I think if you kind of start young enough, and I think you can maybe tweaks and things, but you're right. The kind of longer the go, if you don't have it, then I'm not really sure if you're going to be able to find it. So, yeah, like you said, it's an important thing. So it's something to keep working on, and it's something I've always kind of prided myself on. So,
what's that relationship like with you and Josh Donnelly coming in? Because you come with, you know, pretty good local pedigree. You played out east with Ottawa, and now you come in here. How has that relationship gone?
No, it's been good. You know, I think it's always good in the quarterback room to have, you know, guys that can push each other, and it's always good to have competition. I know Mark has preached that, and me and Josh have both embraced that. So, yeah, the relationship has been good. You know, he's very helpful with me. Obviously, this is my first time getting out in the field with the team, so I had a lot to learn, so he's very helpful. You know, we're just still, you know, pushing each other and competing, and that's what you got to do.
Yeah, no kidding. And in any level of football, the higher you get, I think now you need two quarterbacks to win. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think rarely are you going to go through a season where one guy plays the whole year. I think in any level of football, really, it's almost, especially now, I think you saw yesterday in the NFL how many guys kind of went down. Other guys had to come in. And, yeah, like you said, you got to have two guys, and you got to have a whole room that's, you know, ready to push each other. And if one guy goes down, the next guy has to be ready to go.
Talk about, you know, talk about the NFL. How about that play by Kyler Murray? You're a quarterback. Just talk about how hard that is. He's running away from his passing arm, turns, squares his shoulder up, but then you got to throw it perfectly. It's got to be a high arcing pass. It can't be too far. And of course, we know the NFL end zone's a lot shorter than the CFL end zone.
Yeah, I think he makes things like that look so easy. I don't think people really appreciate how hard it is. I was almost more impressed with him evading that D lineman, rolling to his left, and like you said, he didn't have much space because he was running out of space towards the sideline, and he clipped his hips. And I was just really impressed how much air he got in the ball. And obviously that was a great throw and just a great catch. So it's just, I mean, Hopkins dunked on three guys. So that's just, it was an amazing play. Something that you just kind of go, wow, like, I wish I could do that. Yeah. But that's why he's in the NFL. So.
Have you ever completed a Hail Mary or caught one?
We had one. We played the Calgary Colts, because I was thinking about this. We played the Calgary Colts in Medicine Hat my second year with the Thunder, and we caught it about a half yard short. So that was kind of the only one. Like, I remember I was pretty excited because we got down there for a second. I thought we scored, but he was about a half yard short.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I haven't had any. I haven't had any good experiences on the Hail Mary. So.
And that's the key too. You gotta get the ball to the end zone, right? Like, that play's great, but it doesn't mean a hill of beans if you don't get it to the end zone. Like, he put it in the only spot he could put it in, which is amazing. Like you said, the key there is he's running out of room and puts it up there. What is it about that stadium too? You had that touchdown, you had the Aaron Rodgers to Giannis one in the playoffs, you had the Malcolm Butler interception when the looked like the Seahawks were going into to win the Super Bowl there. John Ryan wouldn't like to hear that. And then you had the David Tyree helmet catch all in the University of Phoenix Stadium there.
Yeah, that's wild. I don't know what's going on with that stadium, but I think if there's – you can't miss a game whenever the Cardinals play or whenever there's a Super Bowl there. I think you definitely got to tune in because you never know what's going to happen there.
Who's your favorite NFL quarterback to watch?
My favorite? Well, it I get a lot of flack because it was Eli Manning. Like, earlier on in his career, it was Eli Manning for sure. Was my guy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I guess you can't really miss. I know it sounds boring, but you can't miss Tom Brady's games. I mean, I try to tune into those. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, all the main guys. But this year, I've really enjoyed watching Joe Burrow play.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he doesn't have the best of line. I think he has a good group of receivers around him. But obviously he's been asked to carry the torch and to really put the team on his back in his first year in a really tough division with a team that really isn't that great. They didn't have a great game yesterday, but I thought he's been playing real well, and I thought he just finds a completion. And like I said, they're putting a lot on him. Like, I think the game that he played against Cleveland, I think they threw the ball like 60 times or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of times teams want to protect a young quarterback, and I think you got to do that sometimes, you know. I do think he's taking too many hits, but sometimes you just got to kind of throw a guy into the fire and let him go. So I think Cincinnati's been doing a good job of that. So I really enjoyed watching him play this year.
It's going to be neat to see that draft class. Burrow from Cincinnati, Herbert from the L.A. Chargers, and Tua. Those two guys met yesterday in Miami there, or Sunday in Miami. That was an interesting game. Herbert didn't play that good, but that's a great draft class. You got Kyler Murray. You got Lamar Jackson. Lots of exciting athletes at quarterback. Okay, just to wrap up the Ram talk here, Sawyer, what do you think of the offense in terms of the receivers? They lost a couple of receivers, but you know, you still got Stusik there. You got Riley Boersma, and it also helps to get Kyle Boersma back in the fold.
Yeah, no, that it was awesome. You know, they got a great group of receivers, yeah, and a good mix, like you said. There's some guys that graduated, and there's some young guys that are trying to work their way up to play. And then obviously you got those guys like Stusik and Boersma that you mentioned that are kind of the veteran guys that have been there for a while, and you can definitely tell that out in the field. And those guys are making lots of plays. And I think the offense it's great for quarterbacks, but it's also great for receivers too. You know, anytime you can kind of scheme guys to get open. It kind of takes a little bit of pressure off them. But then when you also got the athletes that we have, that when you need to, you know, get a 50-50 ball or put more of the onus on them and their route running, we can do that as well. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, it's very quarterback and receiver-friendly offense, and we got a lot of good young receivers.
Couple more quick questions for you. How was the engagement with the team? Did you guys seem to be engaged through the whole workout process through the fall, even though you knew there were no games? Because that's got to be tough on an athlete.
Yeah, it was tough, but I mean, at the same time, we knew that there were no games, and we kind of treated this as our game. So, I mean, we treated every practice as kind of like a game-like atmosphere. I thought the coaches did a very good job of making sure that that was the process. They put some onus on that. Mm-hmm. You know, we started off kind of slow, obviously, because nobody really been on the field for over a few months. We kind of had to ramp it up a little bit, but it definitely was different. I mean, usually at the end of the week, you're getting ready to play a game, but I think after those first 2 weeks, everybody just kind of embraced that it was what it was, and we were just kind of happy to be out in the field, and I thought we really took advantage of the time we had, obviously under some, you know, pretty weird conditions, but, you know, it was what it was.
Okay, last question. How anxious are you that you're going to have a season next year? This second wave, as they're talking about, seems to be rolling through and the numbers are picking up. Hopefully we can get a vaccine, but I mean, I don't know if we can bank on that either. How concerned are you about even getting on the field next year to play?
Yeah, you know, I'm starting to get concerned with the numbers coming up or going up again, and it's just, I try to stay positive, but like you said, like I'm kind of getting down to my last, you know, years mm-hmm. here. So I'm trying to be very realistic with myself and what's going on. You know, I obviously am keeping pretty good track of it, but you know, I'm still hopeful that there's still a lot of time. But you know, I was just thinking today how kind of fast this year went by. And then I just hope we can get it under control, because obviously it would be pretty heartbreaking. Not only for myself, but for tons of players and just sports wise, like there's no university sports going on. So, you know, if this doesn't get better, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But, you know, all we can do is, I would guess, trying to do our best to get it under control so life can get back to normal.
Thanks for this, Sawyer. I really appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
And once again, my thanks to Sawyer Bittner for joining us in the homegrown segment for Riviera Ag Seeds out there in Radville. Time now for the Pick 6, a look at six stories from this past week in the NFL. Ballsy's Pick 6 is brought to you by Sasolex Football, building the gridiron stars of tomorrow today. Number one, they're calling it the Hail Murray. Yes, Kyler Murray with the play of the year so far. A desperation heave to the end zone as time expired that DeAndre Hopkins snagged between three Bills defenders for the Cardinals' game-winning touchdown against Buffalo. Now, two things here. Number one, now we see why former Riders coach Chris Jones liked to throw a tall receiver back there in the end zone to bat the ball away. Secondly, how do you let DeAndre Hopkins have a free release off the line? I'm triple teaming that dude and double teaming Larry Fitzgerald on the other side. You can't give Hopkins a free pass to the end zone and then he bunny hops you and takes the ball off your head like he's eating a bowl of soup. Like, give me a break. Number two on Ballsy's Pick 6. The AFC East is a race for the first time since the early 2000s. That heartbreaking loss by the Bills makes things very interesting. The 7-3 Bills are on a bye week, and the Dolphins, who are now 6-3 after five straight wins, beating the Chargers 29-21, are on the Bills' heels. Buffalo's opponents in the next 6 weeks are a combined 22-24. Miami's are 23-30-1. Now, I still think the Bills are the better football team, but Miami's making a push. And the Patriots, after their win in that monsoon over the Ravens on Sunday Night Football, they're not dead either. They're like athlete's foot. They just won't go away. Bunch of cockroaches there. Number three on Ballsy's pick six. Before the season, I had former Thunder player and world-class curler Ben Hebert on the podcast. He's a big fan. We were talking NFL ball, and I had said the Raiders would be a team to watch out for. Well, don't look now, but here come the Raiders. Yes, the Raiders smashed Denver, and in the last three games, their defense is playing much better. Vegas hasn't allowed more than 26 points in its last three games. That's pretty good by NFL standards. They're the only team to beat Kansas City, if you remember. Oh, and by the way, they play them in Vegas this Sunday. Could be a game of the week type of material. Although, you know, Mahomes and the Andy Reid-led Chiefs are smarting after that loss at Arrowhead Stadium a couple of weeks back. Number four on Ballsy's pick six. Drew Brees and the Saints are rolling. But, yeah, the Saints won their sixth in a row, 27-13 over the Niners. But in that game, the 41-year-old Brees injured his ribs. In fact, it's being reported as I tape this podcast, he's got a collapsed lung and several broken ribs. So that doesn't really bode well for the Saints. Jameis Winston would probably take over, or Taysom Hill, who's a Swiss Army knife. Not sure he's that great of a quarterback. Jameis Winston taking over your football team. Yikes. He's good enough to keep both teams in the game. Number five on Ballsy's pick six. The Detroit-Washington game was a comedy. Check this out. The Lions won 30-27. But they barely won. You see, they led 24-3 only to have Washington battle back to tie it because, well, that's what the Lions do. After Detroit took a 27-24 lead with 2:37 left, Washington marched back up the field to tie it with the help of two Desmond Trufant penalties, one on fourth down, the other on third and 10. Now, after Washington tied it with 16 seconds left, they're going to overtime, right? Nope. The Lions won it on Matt Prater's 59-yard bomb on the final play. That kick was set up in part by a 15-yard roughing the passer penalty on rookie Chase Young. You can't make this stuff up. The Lions are 4-5, which to me makes no sense at all. They're horrible. And quarterback Alex Smith of the Washington football team had his best game since returning from his awful 2018 leg injury. 38 for 55, 390 yards, but his team still lost, which makes sense. And number six on Ballsy's pick six. The Steelers remained unbeaten. Now, some people were picking the Bengals in an upset on Sunday. Yeah, right. Not this guy. Big Ben had four touchdown passes, two of them to Canadian Chase Claypool, who is a matchup nightmare. And with the visit to Jacksonville on deck Sunday, it's looking likely the Steelers will be 10-0 heading into their Thanksgiving night showdown against the rival Baltimore Ravens. And the Ravens never win big games. Lamar Jackson refuses to win a big game. So the Steelers will win that one too. They're on pace to be 11-0. And hey, just to wrap up, I was doing some light sports reading over the weekend and came across this sports story. In San Diego, there's a baseball legend named Randy Jones. He had two great years in 1975 and 76. And those two great years made him an icon forever in San Diego. Now, I was reading a story about him. It's 1975 and the Padres are in New York. Randy walks into a restaurant and there's Yogi Berra, Sandy Koufax, and Don Drysdale sitting at a table together. Yogi motions for Randy to come over. He introduces the young pitcher to the two Dodger legends. Now, Randy immediately says, "Screw you, Don Drysdale, screw you." Yogi asks, "What the heck's going on?" Randy stares straight into Don's eyes and says, "For so many years as a kid, I stood in line waiting for you to sign my baseball, and you never stopped, so screw you." Randy said, "Because of you, Don, I stop and sign everything now." So yeah, screw you, Don Drysdale, right there in the restaurant. Well, Don gets mad, pulls out a napkin, and signs to Randy Jones, "Fuck off, Don Drysdale." They became great friends afterwards, and Randy still has the napkin. That's a great story. One of my personal favorite stories from being with the sports celebrity. I'm doing a dinner in the Tisdale area, and Curtis Joseph, the former Blues and Oilers and Leafs goaltender, is the guest speaker. But he's nervous because he hasn't done too many speaking engagements before. He's in little old Saskatchewan, in the middle of basically nowhere, and his paper shaking like a leaf. And I said, "Hey, man, I just hung your jersey in my basement. I'm a huge Cujo fan from your Oiler days. I still remember fondly the 1997 Game 7 against the Dallas Stars in Reunion Arena when you dove back and made that save on Joe Nieuwendyk. How about we put two stools at the front? You throw your speech aside and we just go back and forth." He said, "Oh, would you do that?" I said, "Sure, I will." We sat there for an hour and a half. After the dinner, he couldn't be more gracious. He was buying me drinks left and right. It was pretty cool to sit and break bread and have some beer with one of my hockey idols, Curtis Joseph. What's your best sports story? I'd like to hear about it. Shoot me an email at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com or leave me a message at my Growing the Game with Ballsy Facebook page. Well, just before we put the wraps on Growing the Game with Ballsy episode 221, we got to remember that it was on this day back in 2003 that the Montreal Alouettes played the Edmonton Eskimos in the Grey Cup at Old Mosaic Stadium, and it was Benton Cahoon with one of the highlights in a losing cause. The Alouettes would lose 34-22 to Tom Higgins and the Edmonton Eskimos. What a catch by Ben Cahoon, one of the greatest in Grey Cup history. A diving catch on the frozen tundra of Taylor Field. Here's what Ben had to say about that play and playing with Anthony Calvillo.
Double move route, so I'd get to my spot and I'd give a little juke one way and then go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot going on with that one, with the outside guy giving a little help and with a double move for me. And then Anthony had to anticipate which way I was going to go. And usually it was a throw that was on the way before I was even out of my break. That was right on the money, right when I turn my head.
It's a blind throw in a lot of cases, and that's what I found so interesting about you guys. You could probably throw 10 balls in a pitch black room and you'd be right on the money between you two in at least 8 of those.
You know what, you're right. A lot of times Anthony, people don't realize that Anthony threw this no look pass a lot of times where he was looking down the middle of the field and he'd just kind of throw this sidearm pass out to the outside receiver down by the sideline, and His eyes weren't even looking, you know, at the target. So he just kind of knew where people were supposed to be and would chuck it. And
Do you ever come back to the sidelines and say to him, "Hey, did you know? How'd you know I was there?"
Yes, absolutely. You're like, "You weren't even looking at me," and he just like, give this little grin, smile, and just nod his head. So
this has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.